I want to take a moment to recognize one of our sponsors. My friend Dave Zook says, you can be conventional or you can be wealthy. Pick one. At The Real Asset Investor, Dave and his team bring their investors high-yield investment opportunities across several asset classes for cash flow, tax impact, and equity growth. He and his team are one of the top five ATM operators in the country, and they have an investment opportunity available to accredited investors right now in the ATM space. To learn more about their ATM funds that produce tax-free cash flow, visit therealassetinvestor.com. Welcome to the Cashflow Ninja, the podcast sharing how to create and grow income streams and manage, multiply, and protect your wealth in the new economy. Are you tired of trading your time for money? Do you desire freedom today instead of retirement in 10, 20, or 30 years? I'm MC Lobsher, and this is the Cashflow Ninja. This is Cashflow Ninja. I'm MC Lobsher. Thank you so much for spending your most valuable resource, your time, once again with me on the Cashflow Ninja podcast. Everything Cashflow Ninja is at cashflowninja.com. That's cashflowninja.com. And don't forget to sign up for our newsletter at cashflowninja.com/subscribe. I've got a fantastic show for you today. My guest is Ernest Nesmith. He's one of the smartest people that I know in the financial world. He's been on the show before. I highly recommend you check out his previous episodes on the Cashflow Ninja podcast. Just go to cashflowninja.com and just type in Ernest Nesmith, and you will find the previous episodes we did with Ernest. Ernest, welcome to the show.
Good to see you, MC. How you doing?
Yeah, doing fantastic. Been looking forward to our conversation. I always learn a lot from you. You're one of the smartest people I know in finance and investing. You have a very creative mind, and always appreciate your take on things and learning more from you. And so does my audience. So I've been looking forward to our conversation today. Things are well on your end?
Absolutely. Down here in Florida, trying not to burn up. And but no, everything's going great.
Awesome. Now, for folks not familiar again with Ernest Nesmith, as I said in the introduction, there's previous episodes that we discussed different niches, which I would highly recommend you check out. So just go to cashflowninja.com and just put in Ernest Nesmith, and you'll find the other episodes that we did with them. I highly recommend you check that out. Now, in today's episode, we're talking about a very, very interesting niche. Very interesting. Trucking cash flow. But before we get to the trucking cash flow, and it's just for folks that are not familiar with you and what you do, if you could just give a little bit about your background and journey with all of our many new listeners.
Absolutely. So obviously I've been in finance and investing for over 15 years at this point, probably going on 20 years. So I'm trying to kind of tell my age a little bit. I partnered with my partner is Marcus Rogers, who's a tax attorney and a CPA. And we've been working together for the last 7 years, working on different real estate investing and insurance, life settlement investing. Now we're going into this new venture that we get ready to talk about now. I started off as an equity trader, moved right into banking, right into investing. And, here we are now doing more private equity type deals and providing opportunities for, other people to, make passive cash flow and, grow their wealth.
Awesome. Now, trucking cash flow. How did you get into this? And I know you're one of the things that I really admire and respect about you too is you are one of those folks that eat your own cooking, as I always to say. Right. You practice what you preach. You just don't, throw it out there. So how did you get into this and what intrigued you about this specific model and business model, investing model that we're going to discuss?
Absolutely. So, as a lot of you people that know me know that my sons are involved in sports pretty heavily. So in the beginning of COVID, my son was still playing basketball tournaments, my middle son. And so we were outside after a tournament and after a game, and we're talking, and I see one of the parents pull up in a semi truck. And so I'm like, man, hey, did you drive to the tournament? It was in a different city. Like, did you drive to the tournament in a semi truck? And he was like, oh no, I just bought that truck. And I'm like, so you came to a different city, but you bought a semi truck and you're going to drive it home. And he's like, yeah. I'm saying, so tell me about this business. So he was like, oh, you know, we have several trucks that we put on the road. I have drivers. They deliver these goods. I get paid for those drivers delivering those goods. And, you know, there's a lot of deductions that come along with it as well. And so as I began to learn more, I decided, you know, within a year's time, I'm going to do the same thing. So I bought my first truck a year later. This is in the middle of COVID, and began to put it on the road and began to make cash flow, and was getting paid, you know, weekly at that point. Then I bought another truck. And then within a year later after that, I had four trucks on the road. And, you know, I began to think to myself, you know, this would be great if we have we could have investors buy into this similar type of structure where they're getting cash flow and also getting a deduction for the trucks as well. And so I began to do my research on how I can do that. And, you know, spoke with my attorneys and my guys and put it together. And they were like, hey, you know, this is like very unique. This is going to work really well. And so that's kind of the shortened version of how I got into it. And, you know, but I did it myself first. So I invested about $350,000 of my own money into this to see it work. And so I'm not saying this from, like you said, just out of research. I actually did it myself. And I'm a griller. I love grilling. So when I grill, I taste my food. And this is exactly what I did in this particular case. And it turns out it's a pretty good industry to be in.
Yeah, because I think, you know, I think it's people started to realize how important truckers and trucking is to the economy. You know, when they basically went on strike, it started in Canada and it kind of like dominoes just fell across the world. And a lot of truckers went on strike with, you know, mandates and all that kind of stuff. And it literally brought economies to its knees, right? Because goods have to be moved from point A to point B. And what I found really interesting too about trucking and goods moving, and this is a little bit of, you know, some of my insights and knowledge that I have in the packaging industry too. When the economy changes and there's different things in the economy that's happening, there's just different things being shipped. There's still things being shipped. So in a recession, for example, where a lot of folks, let's just talk about food, you know, they eat filet mignon, but now all of a sudden they're, you know, eating maybe something else, a ribeye, you know, porterhouse, they're very delicious too. I enjoy all of them, but maybe you're just not spending the amount of money that you used to in boom times. Now there's a bigger demand for the other types of beef and steaks. So you ship more of them and just a little bit less of the fillets, but you're still shipping the same amount of time, right? And it's the same with in other industries. You know, think in COVID, for example, during the lockdowns and so forth, there's certain things that were shipped less of, but what happened to online retail sales? Yeah. It just went through the roof. So now all of a sudden, your shipping was still, there was still a massive demand for shipping because you had all these retail orders and people ordering from their homes, and those goods still needed to be moved from point A to point B. So the economy in different times, it just kind of changes the things that are moving around in the economy, right?
Right, absolutely. You know, one thing I do know for certain is that in our country, regardless of what's going on, we still eat a lot of sugar, you know, because one of the things that we ship is sugar cane, for example. You know, shipping that from Miami all the way out to California, there still is, you know, people are not going to stop eating sugar. You know, Amazon still need deliveries, FedEx during Christmas time still need, you know, products to be moved. You know, so, you know, those things don't stop. Our economy keeps, you know, it's like a train that never stops moving. It's, you know, goods have to go from here to there and somebody has to do it.
You know, here's a fun fact that because I was just doing a little bit of research on shipping and so forth for our discussion today. Here's a fun fact that I didn't know too, is FedEx subcontracts a lot of their trucking.
Yep.
So yeah. UPS owns the majority of their trucks. So there are two completely different companies, right? But FedEx is a little bit of a different model. So sometimes, you know, yeah, they have some of their own trucks and planes and that kind of stuff. Yes, we know that. But there's a very large part of their business that's actually outsourced, and they subcontract with independent truckers.
Actually, all three, what I would say the three biggest shippers, FedEx definitely contracts, UPS still contracts.
Okay.
Amazon is big with, even though they own a ton of their own trucks, but they still contract out as well. So, and we work with all of those guys, to, you know, help ship there, cause they only have but so much of a capacity to hire, but so many people, especially when it comes to truckers. So, you know, truckers, they move around. So,
right.
Yeah. So it's easier for them to contract that out to people like ourselves to move that product.
I want to take a moment to recognize one of our sponsors. One of the wealth strategy secrets of the ultra wealthy is that they make more income and grow their net worth every year and legally pay less in taxes. They also grow their capital when markets go up, down, and sideways. They grow their capital in economies that grow and boom, and in economies that are in recessions and even depressions. If you are a high-income earner and trying to figure out how to legally reduce your taxes while receiving cash flow and growing your capital, Pantheon Investments have a great opportunity right now. By leveraging Pantheon Investments' holistic wealth strategy and its exclusive relationships, you can access an opportunity right now in oil and gas. This opportunity will help W-2 earners to legally reduce taxes, generate cash flow, and grow their capital. This exclusive opportunity will also position you to be on the right side of rising oil and gas prices. This is a limited offering available to accredited investors only. To learn more, go to cashflowninja.com/Pantheon. That's cashflowninja.com/Pantheon.
What does a business model kind of look like? Is it different trucks? You know, it maybe if you can give us an insight just of this business model.
Yeah. So two things that are primary things that obviously is, you know, going to make money for you is trucks and trailers, right? So the trucks is the power. That's what's going to move everything. That's what's, you know, pulling everything from point A to point B. And you don't necessarily need trailers to make money in this industry, because you can pull and use Amazon's trailers. You can use FedEx's trailers if you want, but there's more money in owning your own trailer, because they will actually fill your trailer for you, and you're not having to rent their trailer per se, or get less of a rate for their trailer and use your own. And then you can also lease out your own trailers to other drivers and everything else. So we're going to have a combination of both semi trucks or sleeper trucks.
Yep.
And a sleeper truck is just basically a truck with a bed in it, so that the drivers, whenever they stop driving or when you can only go so far in a day, based on the regulations, and they have to have somewhere to sleep. So instead of going to a hotel, they can sleep in the truck. Then the trailers can be both either a dry trailer, where you're carrying goods that don't need to be refrigerated, or they could be a refrigerated trailer with something that needs to stay cold, which we'll have a combination of both.
And so obviously there's a premium for that refrigerated trailer too.
Yeah. It depends on what's being shipped. If it's something that needs to be refrigerated, in some cases it's more of a advantage of having a trailer that's refrigerated and that has air conditioning, you know. So yeah, it just really depends on what's being moved. So that's the primary thing that's being bought. It's not being financed as well. So that's not in a sense of that we're not necessarily using the bank to leverage finance in this particular case. And, you know, and there's a reason for that, and I'll get into that a little bit later.
Great. The other thing that I also want to mention too is the JIT, the just-in-time kind of like business model.
of basically all businesses around the country in the United States, North America, would say Canada, Europe. I mean, you pick your country. They've tried to just in time it as much as they possibly can, which showed up to be a pretty big problem. For supply chain issues, you know, during COVID and so forth. Before we get into the nuts and bolts of, you know, what you have put together and what you're doing, what are some of the threats, the dangers that are out there in this industry? Because obviously, high energy costs, gas prices, inflation, you know, what maybe if you can speak to that and other dangers that are out there that I didn't mention.
Yeah. So obviously inflation was one, which I experienced that inflation in both the price of the trucks as well as the fuel prices because of you know, what's going on, you know, in Europe, Eastern Europe as well, that had an effect. So fuel is the biggest thing on a, you know, week by week basis. And when those prices jump, that obviously has an effect on your bottom line. But you know, that's since come down, over the last 30 weeks, I would say it's been coming down pretty steadily. But when we put our, you know, pro forma together, it was based on the highest prices that we had saw. So we kind of calculated that into our pro forma, just assuming that if the prices go back up, this is what it would look like. The same thing with the trucks. A truck that I bought in, you know, 2019 or 2020, that was $65,000. That same truck a year later was $95,000. So, you know, since that time is also has come down as well. So, but we factored that in at the highest prices, just in case, you know, those prices begin to go back up, and kind of just plan for it. You know, it's better to be conservative and underestimate and overdeliver type of situation.
Is there the ability to raise prices if the oil and gas spikes back up again and becomes more and more expensive?
On that case, no. It's actually up to the shipper, who, you know, obviously are contracting us. They kind of set the market. Now the cool thing is that because we'll have so many trucks, we can pick and choose, you know, what contracts we want to take on. When you only have one or two trucks, you know, you kind of at the whim or under the control of the shippers. And so they dictate, you know, dictate the price. Whereas when you have 15 to 20 trucks, you can say, I'm going to take your entire, you know, this entire shipment over the next 2 months. And then we can say, this is what we're going to do it for. And, you know, more than likely, because you have that many trucks and that many trailers, they're going to work with you on that because you have a little bit more power at that point. And they know that the work is going to get done. It just gives us a little bit more power having that available to us.
So the shipper sets the price, but you know, what I'm thinking about is when they put out a bid, and say, we have this load that needs to go from here to there. And then they put a price out that they're willing to pay for it. But if it's, you know, I'm just kind of theorizing here, I guess. Yeah. If the prices then spike of like oil and gas, and let's just say it goes up significantly. If it's too low, nobody's going to take it, right? So then they're going to have to rebid it and put out another bid until someone's willing to pick that up.
That's correct. Yeah, that's absolutely right. If they want the goods to be shipped, and it's just as important for them to have a ship as it is for us to ship it.
Right.
So yeah. So we definitely would hold out because I can give you an example. I was having a conversation yesterday with somebody who needed a heavy haul, which is like, you know, equipment being shipped from here to Texas. And they wanted, you know, that to be shipped for like $2,000. And that's not a good price because, you know, with gas prices the way they are, you're going to spend almost that much in fuel just getting there and back home.
Yep.
So, you know, in a case like that, and which in the conversation I was having, this particular guy who owns trucks was, you know, I'm not going to take that, you know,
right.
bid. So that bid will probably sit there for a while until somebody either one get desperate and they want to take it, or they raise their prices, which most likely is going to be the latter. They're going to have to raise the bid in order for somebody to take on that shipment.
So, I'm sure there's a whole industry of brokers for that too, right? Freight brokers and so forth. Trying to match up loads that have to go with certain folks because, you know, like if you're shipping things that are very light and almost like if you're shipping like packaging materials, for example, like bubble wrap, you're literally shipping plastic and air. You're filling an entire trailer load full of that, and I mean you still have fixed prices as the trucking company. You still have to pay your driver, you know, a certain amount of time. The oil, the gas that's going into your truck. There's a price to that, you know. So there's still fixed costs that has to play into this, right? So I could see that there's a huge industry probably built into this to figure out, you know, what would work best for who and match them up with certain, certain trucking companies.
Absolutely. That's correct. And then there's, you know, maintenance, tires, just like your normal car. You have to get an oil change, you know, when your car goes so certain many miles. It's the same thing with the trucks. You have to change the oil. You have to change the tires every so often. You have to, something goes wrong with the engine and it's on the road, you have to get it to a mechanic, you know? There's definitely, certain costs that come along with that. You want to make sure that, you know, what you're shipping is a good price to be able to cover those things and still make a profit at the end of the day.
Yep. The parts, has there been an issue since you've done this with parts or getting parts? Cause that might be another thing tied to, you know, the supply chain that also needs to be shipped.
That also needs to be shipped, right? So early on, and during the very height of COVID, that was a issue. If you needed a part, instead of it getting there in a day, it would take a couple weeks to get there. In some cases, if it's a very specific part, then that could take a little while. It hasn't been too bad, I will say. And that's one of the reasons why we don't buy very old trucks, for example. The older trucks work, but the problem with the very old trucks is that if you need a part, you know, then you have to go find that part for that old truck, and that becomes an issue. So you try to, you know, make sure that you have trucks that's at least, you know, 2016 and newer. Because of that reason, you want to make sure that you can find parts relatively easy. And, you know, a lot of these companies, they keep the parts on hand. So they know what goes bad on these trucks. And so they tend to have them on hand. But if it's something you have to get from China, then obviously it's going to take a while. It could take a while to get here. But, you know, here in the U.S., it's not a problem. Not right now, anyway.
Gotcha. I want to recognize one of our sponsors. Have you ever felt like a lone wolf in life, unable to engage in chats around the barbecue since you're doing things that aren't the norm? Enter GoBundance, a place where driven entrepreneurs, CEOs, or investors who are beginning to experience an interesting phenomenon with more success in life, the feeling of a gap forming between ourselves and many of the people around us. One day, we wake up and find ourselves surrounded by people who may no longer see the world the same way we do. As the trend continues, we become more isolated and even find ourselves holding back from talking about things we are most excited about with friends, family, or coworkers. GoBundance was created for those who choose to live bigger and more fulfilled lives of impact. This tribe is for men and women who want to experience world-class adventure, bucket list trips, high-minded conversations, authentic relationships, and an environment to learn and grow with like-minded people. GoBundance is a tribe where you are able to share your successes,
struggles, ambitions, and failures without being judged. It's a framework to strengthen your journey in becoming a better man, husband, father, friend, and entrepreneur. It is the place men come together to live epic lives and to grab life big. If you want to learn more, go to GoBundance.com and hit the apply button to join the tribe and tell them the Cashflow Ninja sent you.
All right. Well, let's talk about how you've structured it and what it is. And, you know, obviously there's four areas that I love to talk about. And obviously cash flow, being on the Cash Flow Ninja, what does that look like in this business? The tax advantages that it's provide and the tax treatment that this gets, and then the opportunity for appreciation and then leverage, because, you know, that's a huge part, whether it be capital, any types of capital, you know, whether it be a intellectual capital, financial capital, leveraging someone else's skill sets, unique ability, network, credit, all that kind of stuff. So,
yeah, absolutely. So, so first and foremost, so obviously, I'm not driving the trucks myself. So that's, you know, just right off the bat. I have a management company that manages my trucks for us, which would also manage these trucks for us as well. They have a staff that, you know, finds the loads, you know, for us, that hires the drivers, that has a network of mechanics that that manages the maintenance part of the truck for us, and even all the way down to the insurance. So we have a manager that does that part for us to make sure that the trucks stay on the road, to make sure they are moving, you know, constantly. If there are problems that come up, you know, it's their responsibility to make sure that they solve those problems in a timely manner. And, you know, we stay in constant contact with those guys. And, you know, I talk with them, you know, several times a week to take care of any issues that might come up as it relates to the trucks or the drivers. Our managers have been doing this for over 15 years. So they've seen just about everything you can see in the industry. One of the managers actually drive, you know, if something happens, he can jump in the truck and drive it himself if need be. And a good example of that is I have a truck that's right now sitting in Columbia, South Carolina, that the mechanic was working on. It took him a long time to complete the or find out what the issue was and fix the truck. And he's going to there himself to get the truck and, you know, drive it back. We use people like that to make sure that our trucks stay on the road, stay healthy. And that's what we're leveraging as it relates to personnel, per se.
Gotcha. And then what does it look like? So how many trucks are there and how many trucks are you looking to put together? And then how is that treated from a tax standpoint, this business?
Yeah. So if we raise which our maximum raise right now is $5 million on this particular one, which we'll do another one probably in the next year or so. But on this particular project, the max raise is $5 million. At that max, we are probably looking at about 27 to 30 trucks, depending on the price per trucks that we find. Also about 27 to 30 trailers as well. So that would be the idea. The good thing about this particular industry and this particular fund is that we can scale it down. We don't necessarily have to raise $5 million to do what we want to do. If we want to stop at $3 million, we can do that. If we want to stop at $2 million, we could theoretically do that. But at the maximum, we're looking at about 27 to 30 trucks, 27 to 30 trailers, which also means that's, you know, 27 to 30 drivers as well that we'll be managing at that point. As it relates to the type of deductions that you're looking at, there's the Section 179, which would be available in this. That's a 5-year straight line deduction. We'll just have to determine if we want to take it majority of that in year one, or if we want to spread that out over the next, you know, 4 to 5 years. Then obviously there's fuel. We talked about that earlier. So the fluctuation in fuel prices will determine how much of a deduction there'll be for that. And then maintenance, insurance, and endorsements. That's primarily the things that you're looking at. So if you was looking at this on a per truck basis, the average truck, if you were to spread it out over year over year, you're looking at about $19,000 just roughly per truck. If he was using a straight line deduction, we could take more or we can delay that depreciation over the next 5 years if we wanted to. On fuel, which is probably the biggest cost, fuel, you're looking at six figures easily. So somewhere between $100,000 to $130,000 per year on fuel. Insurance and endorsements, about $37,000 to $50,000. Maintenance is, it varies from truck to truck. In my experience, it's been about $15,000 per year that I've spent on maintenance. So when you total that up, you know, that's over $200,000 in potential deductions on a truck in any given year, which is pretty significant. That's you know, money that you're not necessarily paying taxes on.
Gotcha. And for folks that are not familiar with the Section 179, can you just share a little bit about that for our newer listeners that are just getting started on their journey too?
Yeah, so what it essentially means is that when it's just very similar to a car, when you buy a brand new car, as soon as you drive that car off the lot, the value changes, right? You know, a brand new car that you buy for $100,000, as soon as you buy it, and as soon as you put it on the road, the value of that car drops off significantly, you know, very significantly pretty quickly. It's the same thing with a truck. With the exception is that the truck is being used for business. So what it is that the government allows you to essentially write off the lost value of that truck. The truck is, it's not real estate where the value of the truck is going to go up every year. It's the opposite. And so you're able to essentially write off the, when the value of that truck goes down, because you're losing out on the potential appreciation of that truck by not using it. So that's a kind of a very, you know, layman's term. It just basically means that the value of the truck goes down and you get to write off the fact that the value of the truck does go down as soon as you put it on the road. And you get to do that over a 5 year period. And it's your choice if you want to use majority of that in the first year, or if you want to stretch it out over the next, you know, 4 to 5 years, which in our case, we'll probably have some combination of the both.
Are the drivers, are they full-time employees? Are they subcontractors?
We typically do subcontract with the drivers because, you know, drivers come and go. So in this particular industry, a driver can be here today and for whatever reason decide that he or she wants to leave and drive somebody else, and then we have to hire somebody else. So it's just easier to have him as a subcontractor. And they essentially are self-employed at that point.
How does it work can they belong to a union independently as a contractor and then contract with a trucking company? How does that work?
So I'm pretty sure they could, but we don't operate that way. So if they decide they want to unionize and work for a particular company or a particular group of companies, they could, but it wouldn't have anything to do with us. So because we are an independent company, and we don't really have the issue or worry about unions, but we do pay our drivers well. So we typically pay them anywhere between 25% to 30% of whatever the load is, as opposed to just paying them over, you know, a mile, a certain amount per mile. So some drivers get paid, you know, for example, like 50 cents per mile or something like that, which is pretty high. But we pay our drivers pretty well to make sure that they want to stay employed with us.
Gotcha. And then what does the cash flow look like?
Yeah, and that's an even better conversation. On a quarterly basis, what the expectations are is that you're looking at about $40,000 a quarter if you're investing, you know, roughly about $100,000. That's at the gross amount. And then obviously you have to deduct for fuel, paying the driver, the insurance, maintenance, and management of the truck. So, you know, quarterly, looking for about anywhere from 18 to, you know, $20,000 is a possibility of getting paid for a quarter, which is pretty significant. So if you hypothetically putting in $100,000, you're looking at a pretty significant payout. You're probably earning your money back just on pure income within anywhere from a 12 to 18 month period. Right now we estimate 18 months, but you know, we're also trying to be conservative with the estimates as well. But it's not a lot of investments out there that you're going to buy into and essentially earn about, you know, 40% on your investment, you know, year in and year out.
So the position that investors had, is it an equity position? Is it a debt position?
Mm-hmm. It's an equity position. So which will allow them to participate in both the deduction and the income. So it's definitely an equity position. There's a definite time period. So we're looking at a maximum of 5-year time period, of which at the end of that time period, we will sell those assets, or which in this case, the trucks and the trailers. And there'll be a little bit of a bump in income, or I don't want to say return of income, return of money, but it's a little bit of a bump in income at the very end as well. So it's definitely an equity position.
I want to take a moment to recognize one of our sponsors, Producers Wealth. If you're interested to set up your infinite banking policy correctly and have access to a coach that will help you use your infinite banking strategy to grow your business and your investment portfolio, and having your capital work in more than one place simultaneously, and protect your capital from market downturns, taxes, predators, and creditors, you can watch a presentation of exactly how you can do this at yourownbankingsystem.com. That's yourownbankingsystem.com.
So there's, you know, not necessarily like a business that you exit after 5 years and there's a huge appreciation play, but there's a nice bump because, you know, you're buying new trucks at that stage, right? To start the process over again.
Right.
Exactly. From a tax strategy.
Yeah. And there's a couple of reasons for that. Cause, you know, for one, we talked about the straight line deduction, you know, that's over a 5-year period. So, you know, after that point, that deduction goes away. And then secondarily, as the trucks get older, you know, you don't necessarily want to hold on to trucks that are aging at that point. They probably have at least 2 to 3 million miles on them at that point, and maintenance becomes very different as the trucks get to that particular age. So there's a couple of reasons why we would do that. But yeah, we'll sell those trucks off and then buy into another one of these. And then that's not to say we want to do more in between, but for this particular set of trucks and set of trailers, we would look to sell them off at that point. And then the investors will receive part of that proceeds from that sale.
And then they're still in the deal at that stage, right? They continue to be a part of the deal.
We probably would close it out and allow them to buy into a new one. Okay. Because at that point they received they received their money, you know, probably 2 times over at that point, if not more. And that's not including the deductions, which is actually going to increase their bottom line as well. So at that point, we probably just, you know, end it there. But we have left it open ended so that if we decided that we just want to, you know, keep the same structure, they can just kind of rebuy into that same particular structure if they want to. But we'll probably end it at that point and just do it all over again. And you know how things go, you know, laws change and the way that, you know, you can write off certain things might change at that point. So it'd just be better on the best interest of everybody to kind of start over at that point.
Yeah, 5 years is a long time in today's time, right?
It's
12 months is a long time. You never know what's going to happen in 12 months.
You're absolutely right about that. Things change, you know, pretty quickly, but that time period will go by pretty quick.
Yeah, it's funny. I used to be like, hey, here's a 10-year plan, here's a 5-year plan, and this is the next 12 months. Now I'm like, scrap all of that. We're taking this 12 months at a time, you know.
You know, so at the end of the day, you know, these trucks will perform. You know, after year one, as we get into year two, when we have the maximum amount of trucks, at the max raise, you know, you're looking at about, you know, $10 million in gross income. And again, that's being conservative, you know, so that's the expectations based on the way, like you said, based on the way things are right now. But a lot of our estimates, again, they were done back when everything was at its highest. Inflation, inflation costs, fuel costs. So if you just look at it from that standpoint, things actually look better, because as inflation began to come down and as oil prices begin to come down, it's a better, better bottom line for us at the end of the day.
So we've covered a lot here. We covered a little bit about the trucking industry, which is very interesting. Just looking, peeking into this, we've covered, you know, where this fits into different types of economies. We've covered sort of what the business model looked like. We've covered what you're doing with your model and your investment in this space. We looked at cash flow. We looked at tax advantages. We looked at the appreciation or a little bit of income at the end of it at the 5-year window. Mm-hmm. We looked at leverage, which is very, very powerful in this. And we looked at, you know, obviously the dangers, the threats that are out there, because they're everywhere. You have to. It's a minefield, and regardless of what industry. Anything else that you think that folks should know about this investment? Something that might be intriguing to or interesting? Something that you've learned while doing this?
Yeah. So I would say, just from a personal standpoint, these guys are going to benefit from the fact that I had to work through all those minefields, all those, you know, all those dangers that were out there. So we talked about inflation. So I was obviously buying trucks right into the midst of, that inflation and seeing what it looked, you know, what things look like when the oil prices are skyrocketing. And so, you know, they're going to benefit from the fact that we've already been through that. Through some of the worst, where freight actually, you know, the price of freight even was lower as well, because inflation doesn't only affect when you buy a truck, but it also is a direct effect in that the shippers or the companies that's, you know, contracting us to ship their goods, they get hit by inflation too. So it affects what they can pay us to in order to do the shipping. And so we've been able to navigate that. And one of the reasons that we're doing it this way, that we're buying so many trucks at one time, it gives us power. You know, the more trucks you have, the more power you have to go and take an entire shipment, as opposed to, you know, taking one here, two here, one there. No, we can take an entire company's, you know, order and essentially, you know, almost work for them, almost like an employee in a way. And, you know, so they love that, and it kind of puts us in a more powerful position.
Yeah, it's very, very interesting stuff, I have to say. I appreciate you sharing this. When I saw when I saw what you were doing, I'm like, I have to talk to you about this and share this with folks too, because this is very, very interesting. You know, there's so many opportunities, you know, and there really have been so many opportunities the past 3 years for those that are willing to look at them. Yeah. You know, because there's a lot of doom and gloom out there, but within the doom and gloom, if you can see the dangers and threats that are out there, the opportunities are so abundant. Yeah. It's quite incredible, because that's essentially what businesses and investors do, right? They solve problems in the marketplace, and there's a ton of them.
Thank you. I'm just at a basketball game, and I'm, you know, looking at this guy pull up in the truck, and this, you know, that's the genesis of something like this. So, you know how I am. I'm always looking for opportunities, and one of the goals, our goals, is that we always are looking for opportunity to make other people, you know, more money. We look at opportunities to increase the economy by helping increase the people who employ other people, or increase people who have families, so that we can keep our economy going. So that's one of our mandates. And this is an excellent opportunity.
Awesome. Yeah, it's funny. I was thinking about you know, my wife always jokes with me too. You know, she's like, I can't take you anywhere because we go on vacation and we're staying in an Airbnb. And all of a sudden I'm talking to the owner of the Airbnb. He's got like four or five properties and we're like chatting away. And it's just funny that, you go to one of your son's basketball games. The next thing you're talking about the whole business. How does this work? And, you know, it's funny. Always curious. I love it. And by the way, one of the things that I've learned from successful and really wealthy folks is that they're always learning. They're very curious. What are you learning and studying these days? What is of interest for you?
Well, right now it's, you know, a lot of things going on, you know, with the law. That's, I'm keeping my eye on that part. So, you know, that we just, that the Biden administration just signed in a new law. So, which increases the amount of money or the amount of credits you can take as it relates to solar. We have something that's possibly coming up in that field right now because this administration, you know, tends to love, you know, things like that, anything that's going to, you know, help the, quote unquote, help the environment or help us use less of our resources. So that's one of the things that is, that's, you know, that's coming up, and that might have a direct effect on our real estate opportunities that we do at the end of the year as well. You know, and speaking of things that kind of flip into conservation easements and whatnot. So that's the thing I'm keeping an eye on. I think everybody should keep an eye on what's going on with that. There's a new regime of senators and Congress people that's coming into office as well. So there definitely is going to be some type of change come up in the law that's going to either present an opportunity or maybe cause you to maybe switch gears into, you know, a different field altogether. But that probably be coming up sometime in November. So just keep an eye out on any particular new laws that's coming up. And not just the main law, but the stuff, the little small stuff that they throw inside of the law.
That's it. That's the one that you got to look out for is the small print.
Yeah, it's the small print. Make sure you pay attention because there's a lot of things that's on the docket that's going to probably change the way that you invest. And you want to make sure you pay attention to those things.
You know, one of the things on that, the Inflation Reduction Act, too, that I was looking at was the IRS, the 87,000 IRS agents that's there. So that's why I'm like, so if you don't know what's going on and watching the law, all those things were snuck in there. So then it's like, you just have to, I mean, you always have to prepare. If you're a small business and investor, you have to be prepared for an audit. You should be prepared any moment that somebody is requiring certain things and have the team around you to just go, okay, and settle it basically as quickly as possible. So we always encourage our folks to do that. But that definitely is a wake-up call for folks that don't have a team around them already. Are not working with the right professionals that are not confident. That's a big wake-up call. So you have to be confident with the folks that are on you and the teams that you're working with, that if something like that comes, that it's, you know, it's just part of business. Because I think it might just be part of, if you're a business owner or investor, it might just be part of your life anyway in the next 5 to 10 years, the way that things are rolling out, right?
Absolutely. And that's why we're, you know, constantly looking for different innovative opportunities because, like I said, the IRS is hiring 87,000 people. I'm pretty sure they won't do it all at one time. But what it does mean is that you probably see a somewhat of an increase in audits and things like that. So documentation is key. Document every single thing you do. Keep a good record. As it relates to the solar part, that's an opportunity you might want to look into as well, because there's an increase in credits that'll come from that. And anybody, if you have a business or if you're just a regular investor, credits are more important than deductions. You know, if you can get a credit, it has a direct effect on the bottom line, on your, on what you pay in taxes. And then there's a bunch of other things that's coming up as well, as far as the infrastructure and whatnot. And, the good thing about some of these spending bills is that they, with something like trucking, you know, it might be an increase in what they need for logistics. And so that's going to play a part as well. So, you know, we'll keep looking and evolving based on what's coming up in the next set of laws that will come out here in the next few months.
Awesome. Ernest, this has been fantastic, my friend. I really appreciate you coming back on the show. And again, just providing so much value, as always, for all of my listeners and my viewers. Where can folks follow you? Where can they reach out? Where can they, you know, just stay in touch of all the many things that you're involved with?
So obviously, you know, I do Instagram and Facebook and all those things, but I don't necessarily do it that much for business, more so for social aspect, but you definitely can find me there. You'll see me a lot with my kids. My son's in college now. He's playing football in college. So you'll see a lot of those things. But best way to contact me is by phone, either text or call at 561-222-0550. You can also email me at ernest@rognesconsulting.com. I'm pretty responsive on my email. That's two of the best ways to contact me. I'm old school. I'm very, you know, I'm like this. I'd rather be face to face or voice to voice when I'm speaking with people. But either of those ways is an easy way to contact me.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much again for spending some time with us and just, as always, providing so much value to my audience and sharing trucking cash flow.
Yeah, absolutely.
And thank you to all of our listeners and all of our viewers out there for spending the most valuable resource, your time, once again with me on the Cashflow Ninja podcast. Everything Cashflow Ninja is at cashflowninja.com. And don't forget to sign up for our newsletter. You could do so at cashflowninja.com/subscribe. Until next time, live infinitely. This presentation is for educational and informational purposes only. The information being presented and considered does not consider your particular financial objectives or situation, and it does not make personalized recommendations. This material is not intended to replace the advice of a qualified tax and legal advisor or other qualified professionals, and you should not use the information in place of a customized consultation with a licensed professional regarding your specific personal financial objectives, situation, and needs. We believe the information provided is reliable, but we do not guarantee its accuracy, timeliness, or completeness.